If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Welcome back, guys.
Oh, we're back. Hello. Already?
Oh, yeah. I've already pushed the button, Cam.
I didn't know.
You really know how to push our buttons.
Oh, I know. I push it often. If you see me petting something in my lap, it's Ruby again.
Yeah, right. He's being really rude. Yeah, me too.
Do you guys have any fun plans this weekend?
I do. Tomorrow I'm going to France Park in Logansport. My best friend and her husband and my godson are coming up from by where Kim lives. And it's like a 2-hour drive from there. And we're going to have a lovely beach day, a little hike and a little beach, a little slushies.
I went there a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago.
Isn't that water so pretty?
Yeah. But there was a cool coffee shop that we went to in Logansport. Yeah,
where's it at?
Logansport. It's called France Park. It was an old quarry. The water it's filtered through the limestone quarry, but it's also fed from a natural spring. So it's like crystal clear blue water, unless it's been raining a whole bunch, then it's a little murky. But it's like, it looks like tropical water in the middle of a park.
That one place where close down to where you used to live in Muncie, that I think there's a big building there now and there's a pond. Just right down the road. I can't remember what it is. Spring something is what it used
Paradise
to be called.
Paradise Spring. Huh? Paradise Spring? Oh, that's here.
I don't think that's it.
You're talking about across the street from our old house. Was it a park?
No, his house. Before he moved up here, it's just right down the road from it. It's between you and where Brittany lives.
Oh, yeah. They ride dirt bikes and stuff in their yard.
Oh, where that pond's at,
yeah.
That used to be a really, really clear pond. They used to have a beach and stuff down there. I went down there and swam several times. It was a very, very nice pond to swim in.
Don't they have swans in it now?
I don't know. I don't know what's in it now, but I'm assuming it must have been closed down before you guys were old enough to know it.
Yeah, there was never any. We would have went swimming. We were so bored in the summer. So bored.
It was something Springs is what they called it, but I don't remember.
My grandma might have known because she lived in that neighborhood when she first, like right before she got married the second time, when she had little baby kids.
Little baby kids.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I
can. Her sister lived on the other side of Whiteley, and back then Whiteley was not safe. And so grandma would walk to the highway, and then once she passed the highway, she would run until she got to her sister's house. She just wouldn't stop running as fast as she could till she got to her sister's house. Because Whiteley apparently was dangerous.
That's a far way to run.
Grandma used to be a big runner. That's crazy. She was a beanpole, as they say. Remember that she only a few times, because you know, she was our grandma older, so she didn't run a lot. But I remember the first time she ran, we were at the campground and the front of the camper, we had a little yard there, and we were picking on her. And we were like, you can't go catch us. And she was like, oh, you want a bet? And she just took off. We had never seen anybody run that fast. And we both just stopped and started screaming like a prey getting attacked by. We were like, ah, you came so fast. fast. I didn't know humans possessed. Could come that fast.
Possessed.
It's behind that church. Is that a church? Christian Center?
Yeah, it was a part of that park that used to be there. When we were
Springwater Park?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Is that what it was?
Springwater?
Yeah, Springwater.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, me and my friends used to walk back there and
I knew it was something kind of explore. Spring or spring like
we
didn't, something.
We never did anything bad. We just were like, what the hell's back here?
Yeah, it used to be a really nice place. I would have rather went there and swim than go into the reservoir.
Yeah, now it's like a private, like someone bought it and they mm-hmm. have a house back there. Because when we did live really? There, I remember they had a big quinceañera, like just mm-hmm. a huge, like it went on for, I feel like a week. Every day there was just be loud music coming from that direction. Yeah. Huh. I had no idea.
The field, that open field that's behind that now church. I remember in the winter, the stepdad we had that year.
Snowmobile.
That year. Yeah. We went snowmobile and one of his friends went over snowmobile and Josh fell off of it. And I'll never forget, like, looking over to the field and just seeing him run after it. Because those things, you know, if you're going
quick. There's one pole in the middle of the field. And, of course, the snowmobile
was
straight to the pole. And I'm like, no, God, they never let me drive.
I'll never forget that. Just
poor Josh.
You know me. I ask questions before I do something well, that I'm unsure of. Mm-hmm. Like any sound of mind person would. And you know, I've never been on a machine of this caliber. I've never been on a snowmobile in my life. You think they would, hey, teenage kid, the throttle, it's very sensitive. Don't, you know, crank it.
Don't gun it.
Because I'm thinking this is a straight man toy. So I bet everything's going to be, you know, hard to, you know, mm-hmm. just, it takes a man to right. rum it up, you know. So I get on it. They don't tell me, hang on for your f-ing life. And to me, I barely turn and it'll, whoo, and it takes off. I fly off the back of it calmly. I mean, it snowed. I was not injured. No pain. It was just like, a kind of like, whoop. I was just like, whoo. I'm like, what? Like, it happened so quick. I'm in the snow sitting there, and I'm like, then I realize, and I look up, and I'm like, oh, it's, thank God we're in this open field. Yeah. It'll stop. And then I'm like, there's a pole! There's a pole! There's a pole!
I just remember almost peeing my pants just watching him.
Well, our stepdad was an asshole when he was in a good mood. So I'm like, I ain't about to get bitched out for this. Something I didn't even want to do.
Right.
They're like, don't you want to get on it? I'm like, not really. No, this is for you guys.
Right.
The only thing that I've never not drove was a jet ski, and I would love to get on a jet ski. I think those would be so much fun.
I'd love to watch you get on a jet ski.
Yeah, they would be fun. Yeah. We used to do four-wheeling all the time.
I surprisingly liked four-wheeling. Yeah. We went up to, there's a place called Haspen Acres, and it's very rocky and mm-hmm. hilly and muddy and mountainy. And I really took to that. Like, they were very surprised. The straight people I was with, they were like, I can't believe, like, they showed me how to do it. You know, you got to lean forward mm-hmm. when you go up and lean back, however it was. And and I was going up like almost vertical inclines. Like I just told myself, I'm not falling because that's going to hurt. Mm-hmm. I'm just not going
to
fall.
I don't do anything daring, but I do love to ride them. They're fun.
Oh, yeah. I went through a big old mud puddle. I got a picture of it just coated. And all you see is my white teeth.
All you see is my white teeth.
White teeth?
I'll find it so I'm posting on Patreon.
Well, yeah, shit. My papers are all messed up. I don't know where it is.
Oh, yeah, it's your mystery today.
Well, maybe.
Is Kim going to read it?
Yeah, I should make her. Oh, maybe it's backwards. Yeah, here we go. I had it turned around wrong. So, guys, I have a couple words I wanted to share with you.
Words?
Lord, help us.
Yeah, they are some of those rare English words. So this one is Nudi Erstason.
I don't think it is.
Oh, we're going to go with that right now. Nudi Erstason. You mean use it in a sentence?
Please.
I forgot to water the plants. Nudi Erstian. And now they're drooping. Nudi Erstian.
That can't be how it's pronounced.
New, no, no. Maybe it's no. No, D-U-S, tertian.
Can I see it in a sentence?
We're just going to go with what I said. I feel like I pronounced it right. Everyone else pronounced it wrong.
There's a lot of these.
What do you think it means?
But I have never.
No, dear Erstendiden.
Nudie Erstian. Nudie Erstian. I think that's it. Nudie Erstian.
It don't sound like anything.
I can see people yelling at us now.
Right.
So this word refers to the day before yesterday.
Okay.
So not yesterday, but the day before yesterday.
Wouldn't it just be easier to say the day before yesterday?
No, because that's more than one word. It's a big word. Nudie Erstian.
It's like Worcestershire.
So it was coined in the 1600s by English writer Nathaniel Ward. And the word was created from Latin roots that would denote something very recent. But it fell into obscurity almost immediately after it was created. Hmm. So it wasn't used a lot. No one really uses it now.
I never even heard of it.
You probably still haven't.
Nope.
The next word is sennite. Sennite. But two N's. Sennite. What?
Use it in a sentence.
Let's meet again in a sennite and discuss the results.
Next week or not the next night? Or
is an old term meaning a week or 7 nights. And it was derived from Old English. But it vanished from being in common use by the 1800s. So it's not been in use for a long time.
I've been seeing a bunch of TikToks that have, like, where phrases have come from. Different phrases that we use. Mm. I'm going to start doing some of those. I love looking up
the roots. Mm-hmm. So, Nudierster to type.
Oh, yeah, Josh. Because you just thought you could just throw it off your lips.
Well, no, it is Latin. So, it is actually Nudierstetianus. So, I'm gay, so I know anytime a word is pronounced anus.
Anus.
It's like, what's that road? There's a canal street in our town, and every single time I see that road sign, I laugh like Peter Griffin. Anal. It's every time.
Canal.
Anal. It's anal.
Where's that at? Oh, it's Canal Street.
Every time.
That's on Canal Street.
Every day I go through work, I get stopped at a stoplight, and I anal.
Where are you at? Corner Anal.
I'm on Anal. Anal on Avenue. Anal. It's next to the Hershey Highway.
I'm on Anal and Cass.
Cass. Anal and Ass.
Anal and Cass.
They know what they was doing.
I'm on Canal and Ass. All right, so the next word is Gardiloo.
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 I've heard that. I don't know what it means.
It's a warning cry shouted before throwing waste out of a window.
Oh, yeah. Back when Victorian times, and they'd throw their chamber pots out the window. Gardiloo!
It was used in Old Edinburgh, Scotland. The word came from a French phrase that translates to beware of the water, but it became obsolete with the rise of indoor plumbing.
Yeah, if you heard it, you definitely duck. Did not
look up. You smelled up. It later.
Yeah. Whatever you do, don't look up.
Well, the last word I brought is absquatulate. Absquatulate.
Sounds painful.
Absquatulate.
Heard if you put some sugar on that, it'd go back inside.
When the sheriff showed up, the outlaw absquatulated into the night.
Ew, gross.
It means to leave suddenly or sneak away. It's a playful American invention from the 1830s that mimicked Latin-sounding words. It gained popularity during the Wild West era, but soon fell out of favor after that.
I like a good Irish goodbye. It's similar to that. You just, you're at a party or having fun.
Oh yeah, you just
walk I've out. Had enough.
Yeah.
And you don't make any, like,
grand
exit.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
just gone.
Oh, I do that. I prefer to do that. I like to.
Yeah, it leaves you mysterious.
Yeah.
Where'd they go? Are they in the bathroom?
Yeah. But it seems like that. I mean, growing up, that would have been rude. You always go and thank whoever invited you.
Yeah, but that
you.
Just takes so damn long.
It's rude.
I used to do that, but it's kind of like crime. Once you do it once, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And by now, I'm like, they'll get over it. I'll thank them next. That's why you thank them next time you see them. Oh, I didn't see you at the party. I had to get out of there, but thank you.
Oh, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
There's always ways around everything. Social etiquette is important.
Well, guys, are you ready for my mystery today?
Oh, sure. Please.
Okay, perfect. So sometimes your brain can trick you into seeing things that aren't really there.
But like another inch or two.
But what happens when it's not a trick? And what happens when air traffic control hears it also?
Oh, boy.
Well, today we're flying into one of the most chilling and bizarre cases in aviation history. We're going to talk about the final moments of a pilot who calmly described his own UFO encounter right before he and his plane vanished forever.
Ay, Dios mío.
Yeah. Well, picture it, gang. The sun is melting into the horizon over the Bass Strait, that notoriously moody stretch of water separating mainland Australia and Tasmania. It's Saturday, October 21st, 1978. The sky is perfect. It's cloudless. And there's this, I mean, I think it's cool, like a bleeding orange to a deep indigo color up in the sky.
Ooh.
The wind is light, the visibility endless. It's a dream evening for a flight. And for 20-year-old Frederick Valentich, probably not, but Frederick V, flying was the dream. But first, let's get to know the man in the cockpit, because he's as much a part of this mystery as anything else.
Okay.
Fred wasn't just a casual pilot. He was obsessed. He was a member of the Royal Australian Air Force. It's specifically their air training corps. And he volunteered for the local airport just because he wanted to be around planes. Aviation was his entire world. But the problem was, aviation didn't always seem to love him back. He'd applied to the RAAF twice and had been rejected both times for what they called inadequate educational qualifications.
Jeez.
He was studying for his commercial pilot's license, but was struggling, to put it mildly. He twice failed all five of the exams. And just a month before this story, he'd failed three of them all over again.
Oh, he a dummy.
I know. What would be a lot of pressure?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm like that. I'm a very visual learner, but not like read a book and take a test.
Yeah. In the moment that you fail one of them, I feel like you're just going to be second guessing it all the way through. And it would be difficult too, because I mean, that was his dream. He really wanted to do it, and it just was kept being out of grasp, really. But on top of that, his judgment in the air, it was questionable. He'd been officially warned for flying into restricted airspace and was reportedly facing prosecution because twice he flew into the clouds, which is a huge no-no when you're a pilot with his rating, which only certified him. His rating would only allow him to fly at night and specifically in clear visual conditions. And then there's the other layer to Frederick. Well, his father, Guido, would later describe him as a firm believer in UFOs.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't a passing interest. Fred was a flying saucer enthusiast, to say the least. He collected articles, and he genuinely feared being attacked by someone from another world. His girlfriend, Rhonda, recalled that just 6 days before his flight, he had spoken about the possibility of being taken.
Honey, you can't even pass a test. You think they're going to come all the way from another planet for you?
Well, I mean, if you ever hear about people getting probed, they're not probing the people with the, you know.
So how'd you survive this long with that brain? Right.
So you have this complex kid in the cockpit, passionate, but he was struggling. And he was a bit of a risk taker, and he was a true believer in extraterrestrial visitors. Now, the plane he was flying that night was a rented Cessna 182L. The registration was a Delta Sierra Juliet. It's a reliable single-engine workhorse. He'd filled the tanks, giving him about 5 hours of fuel for a round trip to King Island. That should have only taken him about three hours. His official flight plan said he was flying to King Island to pick up some friends, and he even took 4 life jackets to sell the story. But he told his family and his girlfriend he was going to get a load of crayfish. The truth? Neither story was real. There were no friends and no crayfish waiting for him.
He was getting a load of bullshit.
Right. He never even radioed the King Island Airport to have them turn on the runway lights for his landing. It was a flight to nowhere for reasons he kept to himself. At 7:06 p.m., with the last light fading, he keys his mic and calls the Melbourne Flight Service Unit. And this is where it all begins. The voice on the other end is Steve, a calm, professional flight service officer. The conversation that follows is one of the most chilling in aviation history. It starts simply enough with Fred asking if there's any known traffic below 5,000 feet. Well, Robbie checks his radar and it's empty. He tells Fred there's no traffic. But Fred says he sees something and he's adamant. He reports what seems to be a large aircraft nearby that just passed within about 1,000 feet from him. I wonder if that's Robbie or Robbie. I've never seen someone's name spelled this way. It's R-O-B-E-Y. Robbie?
Robbie?
Robbie? I'll call him Robbie.
I like that name, yeah, Robbie.
Robbie. Well, when Robbie asked for her description, Fred couldn't give him one. He just says it has 4 bright lights, like landing lights, but there's a hesitation in his voice. Then he adds a detail that sends a shiver down the other person's spine. He explains that the object is acting like it's playing some sort of game. It's flying over him 2 or 3 times at speeds he just cannot identify. He's not just seeing something. He feels like he's being toyed with. Well, the controller tries to make sense of it. He confirms Fred's altitude, 4,500 feet, and asks again if he can identify the craft. Well, Fred can only confirm that he cannot identify it. Then there's a moment of pure strangeness. He starts to say that it's not an aircraft, but the line goes silent for 2 seconds. What was he about to say? Well, Robbie, ever the professional, asks him to describe it. Fred's response is fragmented. The words of a man whose brain is refusing to process what his eyes are seeing. He describes a long shape moving with incredible speed, and it's right in front of him. So he asks how large the object is, and this is where the encounter changes. It's no longer a flyby. Fred explains that the object seems to be stationary, and that as he orbits, he tries to get a better look. The thing is orbiting in front of him as well. He describes it as having a green light and a shiny metallic-like exterior. Well, for a pilot, orbiting is a standard maneuver. But for that thing to be orbiting with him, on top of him, that's not standard at all. But then there was a moment of relief, or maybe not. Fred reports that it just vanished. It is relief, but it's also more terrifying. Like you're able to watch it, and then all of a sudden it's gone. Yeah. But it wasn't over. A few seconds later, Fred's voice is back on the radio, and the situation has escalated from strange to critical. He reports that his engine is rough idling and coughing. Now, this is important. Aviation experts will tell you this is a classic symptom of a graveyard spiral, is what it's called.
Ooh, that don't sound good.
Yeah, and this is when a disoriented pilot loses the horizon. They can bank the plane into a tightening, descending turn. And the G-forces will build up, and it can disrupt the fuel flow in a gravity-fed engine.
Oh, shit.
And this was exactly the type of engine that he was flying. And ultimately, it will cause you to sputter and cough, which was the sound that Fred was describing.
I've heard that in movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Robbie asked him his intentions. And Fred sounds stressed and confused, stammering. And he says that he plans to go to King Island. He's flustered, and then he delivers the final terrifying lines of the transmission. He says, "That strange aircraft is hovering on top of me again. It's hovering, and it's not an aircraft." Well, following that last word, the microphone stays open for 17 seconds. 17 seconds of just a sound. And investigators who have analyzed the tape could only describe it as, quote, harsh, metallic, scraping noises. Then complete and total silence. There was a very strong search that was launched after that. The RAAF sent out a P-3 Orion patrol plane, and civilian crafts joined. For 4 days, they scoured over 1,000 square miles of the Bass Strait and found nothing.
Jesus.
Not a drop of oil, not a seat cushion, not even a single scrap of wreckage. It was as if the Delta Sierra Juliet and its pilot had just been plucked out of the sky. But they weren't the only ones who saw something that night. After the story broke, witnesses started coming forward. A plumber and an amateur photographer named Roy Manifold had been taking pictures of the sunset over the water about 20 minutes before Fred's encounter began. He didn't notice anything at the time, but when he developed the film, one photo showed a dark, blotchy shape in the sky, moving fast out of the water with what looked like a vapor trail above it. Skeptics, of course, say it could be anything. A developing flaw in the film, an out-of-focus bug.
Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help, you save.
But then there's Ken Hansen. He was driving with his two nieces near Apollo Bay that night when he saw the lights of a small plane descending. Are you okay, Ruby? At a steep angle. And he saw something else. He saw a large circular green light that was, in his words, riding on top of the plane, following it down. He watched them for about 90 seconds before they disappeared behind a hill. But here's the kicker. Hansen told his wife and coworkers about this the very next morning, before the news reported that Fred had mentioned a green light. So this brings us to the theories. First, a UFO encounter. This is what his family believes. Fred was a believer, worried about his exact scenario, and his last words describe it perfectly. The ground witnesses, especially Hansen, seem to back that up. Then you have the official explanation. Pilot disorientation. The graveyard spiral. It does make a lot of sense. He was an inexperienced pilot. There was no horizon. Dusk over water. It's the textbook setup for vertigo. It would make the planets and bright stars visible that night appear to him to be orbiting him. It would make his engine cough. The metallic scraping could be the sound of the plane's airframe breaking apart under the stress of the dive. But does that explain Ken Hansen seeing a green light riding the plane down? Finally, there's the theory that he staged his own disappearance. He was failing at his career. He lied about his destination. He was clearly going through something. But this theory took a major hit 5 years later, in 1983. A piece of an engine cowl flap washed ashore on Flindler's Island. The serial numbers on it fell within the range manufactured for this plane. This is the only piece of physical evidence ever found, and it proves the plane did go into the water. It was not a staged disappearance. So what are we left with? We have a young pilot, predisposed to believe in UFOs, flying into a situation perfect for disorientation. There was a radio call that perfectly describes the symptoms of a fatal graveyard spiral, but also perfectly describes a classic UFO encounter. And ground witnesses who saw something that backs up what the pilot's recordings strongly suggest. And we can't forget the cultural context. Close Encounters of the Third Kind had just been a massive blockbuster in Australia that year. Some have suggested Fred just reenacted a scene from the movie. But maybe, in a moment of pure terror, confusion came to him from spiral disorientation. His mind latched onto the most compelling story it knew to explain that chaos. The discovery of that flap proves the plane crashed, but it doesn't explain why. Was it simple? Was it a tragic accident overlaid with a fantastic story? Or did a young pilot who spent his life looking into the skies finally have his own close encounter of the most fatal kind?
Oof.
Yeah. What do you guys think happened? Do you guys have a... What's your thought?
I do think it's extremely fishy that his destination and everything were off, were completely fabricated. I did bring my pendulum. Like I said, I thought on cases like this, we can even save it for Unmasked.
Yeah.
We can ask Pendulum. Like, yeah, we'll was, do that. He, we'll do was that. He abducted? Did he go into the water, etc.?
Yeah, we'll have to remember to do that.
Yeah.
What's your thought, Kim?
I'm kind of wondering if maybe it was just an elaborate, you know, to disappear.
That's how I'm feeling. Even, I mean, if he had a parachute, he could have plopped out and the plane still would have went to the...
Yeah, they could have still found wreckage.
Yeah, for me, I could see, like, I'm just looking to see what the evidence, like, where does the evidence point me to? Like, what's more likely than not? More likely than not, where my mind goes is that maybe it was suicide. But the only part that I'm confused really about that flips that upside down is the eyewitnesses.
Yeah.
Like, if it was only the guy who had the photo of the weird image of something that looks like it's coming out of the water, that maybe you could talk me into thinking there's something wrong with the film, you know? But, I mean, I've seen the photo. When you look at the photo, I mean, I don't know that I would just be like, oh yeah, that's definitely a problem with the footage.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the other guy talked about it before it ever hit the news, that he mentions the light that was following the plane down, and the fact that he called it a green light, and that was before it was ever even reported.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So why would he have made any of that up? And if you have a plane coming down, I don't know that you would have seen what he describes, you know. So I don't know.
I don't think it was a suicide.
We'll find out.
I know if it was me and if I was suicidal like that, I would want to do something that it would be done and over with. I don't want to be in a death roll.
Well, I mean,
for seconds and you're thinking about your death.
And your wife and kids. Did he have kids or was it just his wife?
I don't remember now.
You're leaving your family behind, at least leaving the plane to sell off for a little bit of money, you know.
Well, and I don't know, maybe he had life insurance.
But I do see suicide, you know, he was failing at his dream of what he wanted to do.
And he didn't tell anyone where he was going.
His destination and everything. That's what really I'm like. And he had a pre-existing hobby or obsession with UFOs and whatnot. So that just...
Yeah, and maybe if you are going through something and it's hard for you to get out, like how best, if that's in your mind, like you have a real strong, because I mean that movie just came out, so I mean it was a strong fascination for a lot of people. He probably knew that, well, one, if he had any type of life insurance or anything like that, then that would be okay. But also it kind of like adds a layer of mystery to his disappearance. And I mean, it worked. We're talking about it right now. It's been many years ago.
I guess I can't see that it could be more of that, of a suicide, not just because I know, like I said, for me, I would want to do it quickly. He could have shot himself or done something to himself to off himself and then the rest of it kind of play out.
Well, I mean, if you're in a plane and you crash it, it's not like it's going to take you an hour to get to the ground. We're talking about quick, I mean, that's not.
You still have time to think about it. You still have time.
Now, if you fly that sucker into the ground, you're going. That's gonna be quick. I mean, I guess it's not as quick as. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that goes by fast.
Speaking of suicide, did you guys see any of the videos of Ozzy Osbourne's final performances here recently?
Mm-hmm.
Which I like Ozzy Osbourne, mm-hmm. Sharon, their kids. I was real big into Kelly growing up because mm-hmm. I was the emo Warped mm-hmm. Tour, black hair, etc. type of teenager. But it was his final performance. I didn't know he had Parkinson's disease.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't either after that.
He and Sharon have a suicide pact, but it's the assisted suicide, like where you go to Sweden, they have the pods and et cetera, mm-hmm. like because her father died of Alzheimer's. And they both, you know, when they get to a point where their minds are no longer their own, that's what they wish. But apparently he's getting closer and closer to that point, allegedly. Mm-hmm. But that just, I was like, I'm all in for favor of that. And I don't understand why it's not legal everywhere. I feel like that should be an option. But that just made me think of that. And just, I enjoyed seeing, it was sad seeing his final performances, mm-hmm. you know.
What a way to go out.
Not able to stand in the hometown where mm-hmm. him and the other bandmates were from. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and they raised over $190 million for the Parkinson's research for whatever hospital that was for.
That's I didn't see that they had done. I knew it was all for charity, but I hadn't heard a number.
Andy, have you heard of his protege? His name's Youngblood.
That's the one,
like he sang a lot of several of the songs mm-hmm. at that concert.
I think that's the one that I seen a video of that he had a cross necklace that he had duplicated for Ozzy and gave it to him as a gift.
He's basically Ozzy 2.0.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He is. He's a little skinny young guy, but if I was 20 years younger.
Yeah. I hate that for Ozzy. He had a good career.
I don't. You know, what a life well lived.
Yeah.
He definitely lived a very full life.
Everybody's, I'm honestly surprised he's survived.
When he was really popular back in the 80s, I was not much of a fan of his because I wasn't a fan into that hard rock stuff.
Right.
But as I got older, then I became more of a fan of his.
Oh, yeah. I love him. Sometimes I play some of his songs when I need like a power pump up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, my buddy Chip Coffee is good friends with his son and daughter.
Awesome.
I know you mentioned one of them was Kelly.
Yeah, his son was in Muncie for quite a while when Shannon and I were teenagers. He was in a short-lived series called Armed and Famous. That was celebrities came to Muncie.
I don't even think there was, what, 5 or 6 episodes?
No, there was season. There was Jack Osbourne, who's the
Janet. Was it Janet? No, it wasn't Janet Jackson.
LaToya.
Wee Man.
Wee Man from Jackass. Some blonde Eric Estrada. Wrestler mm-hmm. and Eric Estrada.
Yeah.
It was weird because you'd be driving and you'd see him filming. All the episodes are on.
I never seen
YouTube.
Any.
I looked it up the other day and watched a few seconds of it. I was like, oh my God, this is such a long time ago.
Yeah.
But it cracked me up. Lamar getting tased.
LaToya, when she, what cracked me up the most on that show is when she went to the little bitty grocery store in a little bitty town, you know, Albany.
Oh, yeah.
And she was trying to get caviar there.
Caviar?
I'm like,
I didn't know Muncie had prostitutes until that series came out. Because we were like maybe 14, 15 or so, and like they were showing, like those are the sex workers, and it was like ladies in acid wash jeans from like the 80s, just not looking very great.
That's when I first saw
those are hookers. Well, I had no idea.
That's the first time I ever saw Kim Josh. You gotta be careful.
Try to spot her in one of the episodes.
Well, and I think it was last year. The Sun has a paranormal show.
Yeah,
and so Chip was called into several of them, and one of them was with Kelly and him and. They did a whole thing. So they've stayed in contact. One of them, they went on to, was it Mary? It was the big ship.
Oh, the Queen Mary?
Yeah. Yeah, one of them, that was that. But it's a really good series.
Yeah. Oh,
I highly recommend it.
I've always been Team Kelly. Mm-hmm. We always rooted for her, you know, growing up. She's similar. She looked a lot, you know, we were chubby and overweight, and I was emo and goth and et cetera. So I'm like, oh, and then, you know, you watch, she's a celebrity, so you get to watch her struggles, and you're like, oh, please, you know, her, Lindsay Lohan, Kesha. I'm like, I am so glad that they have risen above their challenges. Mm-hmm. So glad Lindsay's back. I love Kesha's new music. She got one to talk about eating man. I love it.
All right. Well, are you guys ready for my shit fire story?
I am.
All right. Well, gang, for tonight's shit fire story, we're heading to upstate New York.
Ooh.
Back in 2020.
I've been there.
Well, a couple named Rick Drummond and Patrick Baker were renovating their old house. It was a home originally built by a notorious bootlegger from the Prohibition era. As Nick was removing some old rotting wood, this was trim along the floor of their mudroom, he felt a strange package hidden behind it.
Oh, a glory hole.
Then, that's when it happened. Well, shit far, it was a bundle of 6 bottles of 1920s Old Smuggler, blended scotch whiskey wrapped in straw. Well, shit far and save the matches. As they continued exploring, they found hidden compartments in the walls and beneath the floorboards.
Ooh.
And in total, they uncovered 66 bottles of that century-old illegal bootleg booze.
Could you imagine how much that would be worth?
Oh, I know.
Museums and rich people real excited.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I just think that's so cool that you would just find something like that in the building.
I'd be happy with newspaper clippings. I love finding, you know, when you do remodels or something and you find old newspapers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in houses. I love that. I like looking at them.
I was watching something the other day. They were redoing a house or whatever, and they were planning things for the next people that done it, you know, that would remodel, and they were plastic hands, you know, the skeletons and stuff. They put them all on the walls and stuff for people to find.
I've been obsessed with watching that old TLC Trading Spaces show Design on a Dime. And my God, I'm surprised people were not murdered. The shit they did to the, like, neighbors and siblings. Like, they would come in and just, one of them, they were two lesbians. And their neighbor came into their house to remodel for that show and left them with walls that were painted, and then they mixed straw.
Like, no, they did not.
They feed with horses into like a plaster type stuff, but not enough to actually coat it, like just enough to make it to where they...
Enough to piss me off.
The entire wall and ceiling covered with...
No, they didn't.
Straw. And it was like with a pink flesh-toned paint color. And them lesbians will piss.
No, I would.
You know,
be
they
too.
Bring them in there. They're like, okay, take the blindfold off. And they're like,
put it back
just
on.
Stunned. I saw it on a clip and I was, what happened? I got to see if they redid this room. Surely they had to have, because I hated it. Well, apparently they sued the show because what is straw? Dried grass. What does dried grass accumulate in moist environments such as homes that have moisture in them? Mold. The entire thing. They had to like have the walls completely removed and gutted.
Oh my God.
After a few weeks, it was black mold. I was like, what the
hell? That's horrible.
But they'll do just the craziest stuff. Though.
Way back in the day, they used to put sand in paint to make it rough.
Mm.
That's what my house is painted with.
I've had nail polish like that before.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, gang, what do you really think happened to Frederick?
We'll find out with my pigeon.
Was he a victim of disorientation, or did he really have a close encounter of the most fatal kind? Well, tell us your theories. You can find us in our Facebook group called Shane and Josh's Rabbit Hole. We're also on Unmasked, which is on Patreon at patreon.com/itsmysteryinc. You'll find that link in the show notes, too. And we have an entire library of old episodes, all completely ad-free. That's on Patreon right now.
Almost 200.
Yeah. Not to mention that we have almost 200 also of our signature unmasked episodes.
Oh, so we're like 400.
Yeah.
My last week's episode, I actually went through all of our stuff to make sure that somebody hadn't already done it. And I started at the beginning. There's over 900, almost 1,000 posts.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
From, you know, anything that we've posted on Patreon. There's cool. Almost 1,000.
Well, as we've just talked about, there's all this stuff that you can find all on Patreon. And it is the only way that you can ever get one of our Mystery Ink tumblers, which we just redid.
Yep.
And they're nice, fabulous. Too. So go check it out, patreon.com/itsmysteryink. And as always, shit far and save the matches. Bye.
Bye.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.